Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Lisa Champion, who is a spiritual counselor, energy healer, and today we're going to be talking about Empathy 101 and also other things, spiritual lessons, and how exactly our higher guidance can be used to help us with the reasons we come into third dimensional manifestation. Thanks, Lisa, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So you're located near Boston, is that right?
That's right.
And do you want to give the listeners your website so that if they want to go on your website at the beginning of the show, they can?
Absolutely, yeah. My website is lisacampion.com. And I have lots of information there about empathy and what that's all about, some psychic development stuff, and also what it's like to do a session with me, since I do private sessions by phone or Skype as well as in person.
Right. Go ahead and spell that for them so they can get the spelling right.
It's Lisa, L-I-S-A, Campion, C-A-M-P-I-O-N.
Great. Okay, well, great. You want to tell a little bit about how you discovered your psychic gifts and your study of metaphysics and how you came to, you know, understand what you were here to do?
Sure, yeah. It's kind of an interesting story, actually, since I started working as a psychic when I was 19 years old. That was about 30 years. Yeah, it was about 30 years ago. And I've done nothing else. I mean, my whole life, that's pretty much what I've done. And I was one of those really psychic children. And back when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, it was really unusual. It was really rare. It was not something people talked about. And I learned quickly to keep quiet about it. but my gifts were pretty, you know, extreme. I really, you know, saw things other people didn't see. I could see this dead people and other angels and things like that. And it's a bit of a streak that runs through my family. So the women in my family have it. And I think my gift was a little bit more extreme because I had a twin brother that died in utero. I think that connection, you know how twins are connected psychically, and then he left, and that sort of created the connection for me. So really, since the time I was born, and I recall sort of freaking my mom out by having this imaginary friend. I was talking to somebody. I was probably like 4 years old, and she's like, "Who are you talking to?" And I'm like, "My dead brother, William." And she, you know, remember the look on her face, you know, she's holding a glass, she dropped the glass on the floor and ran out of the room. And,
right,
you know,
right.
And to me that was normal and just something that I had to deal with pretty on a daily basis. And because it was the 60s and 70s, there was no psychics on TV, no New Age bookstores, nothing like that. There were like 3 books in the library about it, you know, and I read them all by the time I was, I don't know, 10, but... And I really had to figure out on my own what to do about this and how, and also not only the psychic thing, but the level of empathy that I have. And so I became quite passionate about helping other people not have to do it the hard way like I did. That has really driven me my whole life to teach, to work with people. I specialize in working with psychics, healers, you know, intuitives, empaths, whose gifts are emerging, and helping them learn how to understand and manage those gifts and see them as a gift, not as a curse. Because a lot of people feel like, why do I have this? What's the matter with me? You know, and I really especially feel that now kids are coming in way more psychic. Like, I mean, young children and teenagers who are so much more psychic than I'll ever be. That I'm like, they really need help, and it seems to be more and more common, you know?
Yeah, so, I want to emphasize that it is genetic. It is, I mean, some people are adopted, so they don't know, but it is genetic. It is passed through family lines, and I absolutely think that your connection with your deceased brother is so important. I got chills when you said that. That really is true. And I really want to commend you on your teaching of this, because I also was born similar to you with the gifts of the Spirit, but basically didn't really concentrate on school until I became a plastic surgeon and got through my plastic surgery exams, you know, written and oral exams. And then I found myself in Dayton, Ohio, where everything was pretty boring. So to help with the boredom, I took psychic lessons from a psychic there named Nancy. And so I kind of went through the kind of class that you teach, and it was really good. It was really a great thing to do. So if anybody has psychic gifts, I'd encourage them to have a class on it, because just like anything else, when you study it, you develop it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I feel like, you know, I work with people all the time that have a tremendous amount of latent ability. And even if you do, like I did and like you did, you do, obviously. And I think even when we have latent ability, we still have to train it. It's like any other skill.
We do.
Like,
absolutely.
You could be born with incredible, you know, genes for to be an athlete or to be, you know, a musician. And just because you have that, you still have to get up and play your game. You still have to practice your thing.
Right.
And it's really through practicing and focusing on it that we get better. And so in my teaching, I work with, you know, people that have a strong latent ability, and also other people that just want to develop. So people sometimes ask me, well, can anyone, you know, develop their psychic? And the answer is yes. Just like anyone could develop their athletic ability, or anyone could develop their musical thing, you have to work it.
You have to practice, right?
That's right.
But you know, it's such a gift to do that. I mean, such a wonderful thing to develop, because I don't care what you're involved in, if you have information that is outside of space and time to help you make decisions, you will spend a lot less money, a lot less time, and a lot less aggravation getting things done. And so it's an extremely practical thing for people to develop.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I would like to just share with you a little bit of my framework on what you just said. And that is, I see two really distinct kinds of intuitive abilities. And one of them is basically just what I think of as intuition, and the other is psychic.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to explain how I see this, because it's a little bit different than how most people do, but everyone is intuitive, and intuition is when you're getting information from your own system, like your inner wisdom, and we feel that mostly through our bodies. So our bodies will give us constant information about, you know, what's going on, and through our emotional stuff. So you'll get it. A sense of, like, I don't have a good feeling about that, or I have a good feeling about it, right? And then there's the gut, which is the knowing, like, I don't know, you know, I don't know how I know this, or I don't know why I know this, but I do. And everybody has these intuitive side of them. It's sort of just part of being human, I believe. And and if you want to develop that, it's simply a matter of paying attention more and more to it, because a lot of times we get this intuitive information, but we disregard it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you know what happens when you do that. It doesn't usually go well. So we have to pay attention, and then we have to take action on it. Those are the two things. So you get the intuition hit, and you have to actually act on it. And if you do that, over time, you will strengthen your connection to your own intuitive self.
Right.
And that is slightly different from what I think of as psychic. Psychic is more what you said, when we're getting information from outside of our own system.
Right.
So we're connecting with spirits, with God, I don't know, whatever, your own soul, you know, that we all have angels. Like, there's a sort of a team of these, what I call spirit guides, you know, working with us that are not us. They're not part of who we are. They're not part of our system. They're outside. And that's psychic, and it also takes practice to develop that.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And do you want to talk a little bit about, are your psychic development classes both online and in person, or can you talk a little bit about how you do your psychic development classes?
Yeah, mostly right now my classes are all online, and I do a video class. It's quite fun. So I love the technology we have now that, you know, allows me to sit in front of my computer and do a live video feed. For my students.
That really
I'll
is.
Have because I have students really from all over the country that study with me, and I like that fact that technology can make this available to people everywhere, and it's fun. It's like a webinar. It's a video-based webinar program.
Mm-hmm.
So
great.
You can be on your computer, you can be typing in questions, or if you don't have that, you can be on the phone, connected in through a phone line.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's how I do it now. Yeah.
Yeah, I really haven't, you know, I interview clairvoyants fairly frequently on the show because I have an interest in what, you know, in educating the public about this. But I don't know anybody else who has an online webinar for psychic development. That's a really good thing.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. Yeah. And some of the other things, you want to just go through a little bit about what else you offer. I see here you offer energy healings, and I assume that's in person and remotely both. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. So I've been a Reiki master for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I also teach Reiki. I love teaching Reiki. I teach Reiki every month, and I've taught many, many, many people Reiki. And
mm-hmm.
I'm also the dean of students and one of the senior teachers in an energy medicine school called the Reese Thomas Institute of Energy Medicine. Reese is my business partner and one of my best
mm-hmm.
friends. And 8 years ago, we started an energy medicine school to train. It's a 3-year school, so it's quite intense.
Great.
And it's actually the first energy medicine school licensed by the state of Massachusetts to teach energy medicine.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
And
cool?
Yeah, and we're very up and coming. We have students now that come from all over the country and even all over the world to study in our energy medicine school.
Nice.
And most people, you know, are in it because they want to learn more about energy medicine, but they've also
mm-hmm.
heard about it because it's a very powerful personal growth process. And you know, they're in it to get sort of the transformational things that happen inside the school,
sure.
too. So when I do energy sessions on people, I usually do a combination of Reiki and full spectrum
mm-hmm.
healing, which is the kind of healing we teach in the energy medicine school.
Great. Well, I want to mention to the listeners that, you know, anybody who is learning to do healing, Reiki or other energy systems, the energy coming through you to the patient or to the pet or to whatever I've even sent energy to machines to heal them. You know, it doesn't really matter. You can do it. They don't have to be they can be anything, and if they're broken. And that energy is really healing for oneself. I mean, a lot of times when I'm in the healing room and do a healing on a patient and they're concerned that I'm giving them my energy, and I assure them, no, I'm not giving them my energy, and that if I'm tired or, you know, if when I come out of surgery, sometimes I'm a little exhausted, that's a great way to replenish my energy. So, you know, to study something like this is incredibly helpful for your own spiritual development and your own energy when you're practicing it.
That's absolutely true. And so I see about 20 clients a week. Myself for my private practice, and I do
mm-hmm.
Reiki and this energy healing. Usually I combine them, so my clients who come
great.
To me in person are, you know, are lying on a table, massage table,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
and I'm doing the reading and the energy work at the same time. And I've been doing this for 15 years pretty straight out, and I really
mm-hmm.
think I would have been so burned out if I wasn't also doing the energy work while I'm doing the reading. So I find
mm-hmm.
what you're saying to be completely true, that I can be very tired coming in on Monday morning, but as soon as I start, you know, the energy session, I feel pretty good, you know. So
right,
it does
right.
fill ourselves first before, you know, before we give it on to our client.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing.
Well, great. Well, the title of this radio show is Empathy 101, and I just wanted to let people know that there's a big difference between sympathy and empathy, and that empathy is really core to the work that we've been discussing, because we actually, it's a field effect, and we actually vibrate within the fields and take on the impressions and the energies and then get information about the different things. So empathy is, to me anyway, kind of it's not just emotional, it's actually a field effect of when you're with when you merge with someone else's energy field. Is that similar to what you experience?
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely correct. And because I'm an energy medicine practitioner, and I have been always able to see energy, you know, see people's
mm-hmm.
auras and their chakras since I was
right.
small. I could see that. And so the first thing I noticed about empaths, You know, so I sort of think of empaths as a slightly different species of human. You know, like there are such strong characteristics about being an empath that are really markedly different from people that are not empathic. And the first thing that I see about that is the differences in their energy field. So when I look at an empath's energy field, it's much more expanded. It's bigger.
Right.
It has this sort of spongy, porous outer edge to it, where a non-empathic person is more like a solid barrier between them and the world. So,
right. True.
So that sort of phrase, like, well, you know, psychic is very true for people that are true empaths. And then what happens is we go out into the world and we have this wide open field, this expanded energy field, and with a spongy layer, and we absorb other people's energy, their physical energy, and if you feel that in your body, it's called physical empathy. And you might experience that as you put your hands on somebody and then all of a sudden you've got a headache and it's their headache you're feeling in your body. And all good massage therapists or body workers have a degree of this. You know, and probably good medical doctors too, you know.
Nurses do too. I mean,
absolutely.
All the medical field does, because they can tell what's wrong with the patient. I mean, one of the most important things in medicine is to understand when somebody's really sick, because you need to do something. Because if you don't do something, like admit them to the hospital or, you know, treat them with medicine, they could die. You know, so the empathy part is very, very important, because you really recognize that somebody is going downhill fast.
Exactly, and the combination of physical empathy and emotional empathy, which is when you're not feeling their physical pain, but their emotional pain.
Right.
Empathy is I believe that all empaths are healers. They're born to be healers, and that those two kinds of empathy are like having a built-in imaging system, a built-in MRI, CAT scan, X-ray, because they're diagnostic tools that healers need to diagnose somebody's situation, whether it's a physical or emotional situation, and that's what it's for. That's why we have it. And when you understand that, you can begin to see these things as skills, as gifts, as, you know, absolutely necessary gifts to fulfill your life purpose, rather than this crazy curse. You know why I know
right.
I need a lot of, you know. A lot of people.
I can't go to a football stadium because I feel like worn out. You know.
I know. Like, I can't even go through Walmart because I feel worn out.
That's right. You know? That's right.
And I know, like, I work with so much, and this is sort of where my passion comes in with empaths who are really debilitated by their sensitivity.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't function in the world. They suffer from anxiety. They have depression. They, you know, they can't get off the couch. They have fibromyalgia. They have health problems. And because empaths are always drawn into service work of some kind, you know, helping other people, they go to their job as a nurse in the hospital, and that kicks them hard, and they come home and they're flat on their back.
Right.
That's where I feel like, you know, I think the world needs as many healers as we can get. And if I can get them off the couch and online and back in their, you know, the world doing what they came here to do, because Lord knows we need as many of those people out there in the world.
We sure do.
Helping we can get. So that's where I feel like, okay, I can help them understand. I can help them learn some basic skills, which the basic skills to manage your energy aren't difficult to learn. It's a bit like, it takes practice. It takes changing our energy habits, like going to the gym and working out. You know, you got to learn. You got to do a workout for your energy field, and then when you do that, it's so much easier to be in the world. And you know, I'm sure you've experienced that as well as a doctor, right?
Well, yeah, I had a funny story happen when I was just learning about what we're talking about. My father called me up, and he had bursitis in his left hip that was really hurting him. So I became my empathetic self, and I developed a really bad bursitis in my right hip, which is interesting that it went to the other side. And then I'm thinking, and he says, I feel pretty good. I said, yeah, and I have a painful hip, and I'm limping. I said, well, I'm going to go take a Motrin. And actually, the Motrin worked, but, you know, it's not the right thing to do. I mean, I really needed your classes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is, how do you know? Like, if nobody's ever talked to you about this or you didn't have any training, how would you know what to do, you know? And you wouldn't. So
you wouldn't. No, I had to take classes. I had to learn. That's when I was guided to mm-hmm. you know, study with Nancy in Dayton, Ohio, because I really was taking on stuff. I mean, I would find myself on the floor, the floor in the hospital room.
Yep.
I mean, this is not okay. This is not okay. I mean, you know, you don't want to have your surgeon on the floor energetically weakened because they were empathetic to someone who was critical, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I had to do something.
That's so typical, you know. And,
it is,
And that's what I was saying. It's like sort of this debilitation that happens with, mm-hmm. and of course, the stronger your empathy is. So I sort of think about, I categorize empaths in my head sort of on a scale of 1 to 10, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you get up to the 8, 9, 10, and those people really, like, until they learn how to cope with their, how to master and manage their empathy, they can't leave their house. Like,
yeah.
You know, they really have difficulty functioning in the world sort of and they
mm-hmm.
tend to be the one with the most extreme healing gifts too, you know.
Right.
So if they were in the world. So here's a story I'll share about one of my students was
mm-hmm.
our woman, lovely woman that I trained in Reiki, very talented energy healer, and she felt a strong calling or passion to do hospice work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she got trained, and she was working in the hospice, and it's a very difficult emotional environment, physical environment. So she's around people with huge pain, they're passing, their emotional pain, there's the emotional pain of the family members, and
mm-hmm.
she's very skilled at it and really an angel, you know, here in the world. But she called me after like 6 months of doing it, and she's like, I'm going to have to quit. I can't get off the couch. I'm sick as a dog.
Mm-hmm.
I have fibromyalgia. My husband's about to divorce me. I can't show up
yeah,
to my children, you know. She was
yeah.
a mess. And she's like, I'm going to have
absolutely.
To. And she was heartbroken. Like, and I was heartbroken
mm-hmm.
for her. And I just was like, okay, this is not okay. Like, the world needs this woman. You know, what can we do to help her? So I worked with her for a couple of months, teaching her
mm-hmm.
some of the energy management techniques, the ground,
mm-hmm.
how to ground, how to shield
right.
herself, how to clear the energy she picked up from other
right.
people,
yeah.
how to stay in her
absolutely.
Body, you know, and that we worked on some psychological things, how to set boundaries, how to say no,
mm-hmm.
you know, which are often very difficult for empaths. And she really put her back into it and worked the system that I have hard and
mm-hmm.
was able to, you know, go back to work and is still working
mm-hmm.
in the hospice. And really, instead of being crippled by this, feeling herself, her power as a healer, and, you know, so force for good in the world, and that is what motivates me to. She said to me, "You've got to write a book." She said, "You've got to write this down so that other people who are in the same situation can get the help that I got." And that's I did. That I started working on a book called The Gift of Empathy, and.
Mm-hmm.
It's about halfway through, and every time I flag on it or get busy and doing something else, I meet somebody like her that sort of reaffirms my passion to putting the work out. So for that reason.
Yeah, I don't know any other books that address this. There are books on psychic defense, but
yep.
that's more people feeling that they're attacked, and this is not that at all. This is just people out in the world that are way too sensitive.
Right.
So
yeah, and
yeah,
I know a bit about the psychic self-defense too, and I have
mm-hmm.
you know, things to say on that topic as well. But this is a different, you know, this is a different subject really.
Yeah, it is. So I do know what you're talking about when you go out, say, to Walmart and you pick up somebody's backache or headache. I hardly ever get backaches or headaches, so whenever I get one, I know I picked one up. And it's what's interesting is you can pick it up without even really knowing who you picked it up from. You know, you don't. It's different than with the healing table when a person comes in with a headache and then you get the headache. Well, you know you picked it up from them and you probably did something wrong if you're still feeling the headache. You know, you got to figure out how to get rid of it. But yeah, it is really a matter of closing off your field and. Being able to set temporary boundaries when you're out in public.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and it sort of depends, like, on, you know, I find physical proximity to be, you know, a factor here. So if you're sitting
it
next
is,
to somebody
yeah,
on a tree, even somebody you don't know, you know,
yeah.
or you're touching them, it's stronger. And also emotional connection. So you may feel stronger empathy with somebody that you care about, you know, that you have a relationship with. And then I think it's also a matter of, like, what kind of mental state you're in. Like, I know if I'm tired or hungry or, you know, not out of sorts in some ways, and then I go into a situation like that, it's so much worse for me than if I'm sort of, you know, feeling okay, right? So
that's
all
true.
Of those things, you know, play in. And the method that I teach, the energy management strategies that I teach people, are best done sort of as a daily practice, you know, every day in the morning or every night before you go to bed. You do this kind of breathing and guided meditation thing that I do that helps put you back in your body, release, clear the energy you picked up, strengthen the outer layers of your energy field, replace lost energy, because empaths have a leaky energy field, and they get a lot of stuff in, but they also leak their own energy out often, and they feel tired, you know. So as a daily practice over time, it's like going to the gym, like I said, and your field gets stronger. And then also I think being able to do it in the moment, so I might do it in the parking lot outside of Walmart, you know, to just bring myself back in, because we sort of need it when we need it.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I wanted to mention, I treat a lot of fibromyalgia, so one of the things you can tell people who are dealing with fibromyalgia is that they have a lot of a Krebs cycle disruption, and taking magnesium malic acid, and almost everybody with fibromyalgia has a magnesium deficiency. So, and magnesium, one of my friends has a theory that magnesium is needed for psychic development and the shift, the ascension shift we're in. So right now, everybody who's in this shift is magnesium deficient if they're not taking magnesium. So that's real important. I had my roommate came downstairs one day, and he said, "I had a dream that you knew what I needed." And I turned around and I said, "Magnesium." He said, "Thanks." But magnesium malic acid is really good, because magnesium and malic acid both feed the Krebs cycle. So you'll get better energy, more relaxation, more, and some of the other magnesium combinations make you have diarrhea more, you know, if like magnesium oxide's not that good unless you're constipated, in which case it's great. But magnesium malic acid is absorbed. You can take it 3 or 4 times a day, you know, spread out, of course, so you don't get diarrhea. But just tell your people with fibromyalgia to go ahead and take magnesium malic acid.
Well,
it's 100% helpful, you know.
That's really a great tip. I didn't know that. I mean, I take a ton of magnesium. I always have my whole life. Like, I just know that I need it, and I take it, and I often take it with potassium, because I feel often...
Yeah, potassium too, absolutely.
Yeah.
But there's something with potassium you need to know, tell people. Unless they're on the kind of medication that says don't take extra potassium, it's on the bottle if you're on that. But other than that, the best way to take potassium is Morton Salt Substitute, because it's about $1.74 in Walmart or Target, and you can put it on your food rather than sodium chloride, and it will replace potassium very quickly. It's really neat. You don't, because potassium that you take orally in a pill form can upset your stomach, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's in some cases. So
that's
the way I like to take it.
In general, right now, to be very mineral depleted.
Absolutely.
Because we don't get minerals in our food anymore with the farming practices we have. It's stripped the mineral content out of the soil. And
right. Yeah.
So I feel pretty much everybody needs minerals, heavy doses of mineral supplements. But
yeah.
But
yeah.
I also think fibromyalgia to me is a real empath problem. So when I work with fibromyalgia people, which I do frequently, I see one of two things. I see either unhealed trauma, usually early childhood trauma, or heavy, heavy empathy, unshielded empath, or both.
Right.
You know, and that's where I think where people get that particular thing. And I think fibromyalgia is particularly suitable to healing through energy medicine. Like, you know, Western medicine doesn't really know what to do with it, but it works.
Right.
Energy medicine works incredibly well at resolving that problem, you know.
Let me add just a couple more categories. These are patients I see in my clinic because I'm the world's expert on problems with breast implants. Fibromyalgia is also due to chemical toxicity. Leaking silicone implants have been shown to cause a high degree of fibromyalgia. Mold. I'm actually on Animal Planet Monsters Inside Me with mold and breast implants, aspergillus, penicillamine, all sorts of molds. One-fourth of the population can't get rid of mold biotoxins, and they develop fibromyalgia. So some of your patients need to avoid mold, okay, because they might be exposed to mold in their environment. Or if they have breast implants that are older, especially saline, they might want to get those out. And then there is a weaponized mycoplasma and then a regular mycoplasma, both the weaponized and the regular one. Mycoplasma pneumonia and mycoplasma fermentans cause fibromyalgia. So that's an intracellular infection, which is usually treated with, well, you can treat it with electromagnetics, the harmonic quad. You can treat it with certain supplements. And some people actually, the weaponized one requires antibiotics for a long period of time. But there are some other treatments being developed for intracellular infection that are great. It's a combination nano silver, nano gold, and mineral IV thing that is going to go into clinical trials. So basically, I would agree with you that the majority of people that are going to come to you with fibromyalgia are going to be what you can help them with, mm-hmm. which is this thing you just described. The majority that come to me are going to have implant problems. So they're very third dimensional. Do the third dimensional stuff and they get better. But fibromyalgia essentially is an energy depletion due to a Krebs cycle disruption, and different things cause it, But a leaking energy field, absolutely will cause fibromyalgia.
That's
everything I know about fibromyalgia, and I know quite a bit.
Yeah, you do. Thank you so much for sharing, because I didn't know
you're
that.
You're welcome.
I work with that all the time, so I really,
So if somebody is getting better but not getting well, you need to consider, do they have breast implants? Do they have mold in their house? Do they have you can actually do a blood test for the mycoplasma that can be diagnosed, or I'm sure that you'll start to look for it. You'll start to see, in their field if they have that energy. Once you see it, you'll be able to recognize it. Because I certainly do. I mean, I walk in the room and I hear mycoplasma, that's what I hear. I go, okay. So we got to treat that, and intracellular infections are really bad. Especially when we weaponize them. So that's even worse. So anyway, and if you want to read about the weaponized mycoplasma, go to Google Garth Nicholson. It's Nicholson, I think, Nicholson. He was a cancer researcher at MD Anderson that discovered the weaponized mycoplasma being part of the Gulf War syndrome. And he wrote a book called Project Daylily about the weaponization of this and all sorts of very interesting things that I think the whole world needs to know about.
Yeah, I will look it up. Thank you.
And the reason he called it Project Daylily is that the weaponized mycoplasma looked like a daylily under the microscope. So anyway, that's a little bit about fibromyalgia. But I agree completely with what you're seeing, because a constant energy leak through your field and constantly taking on less than good energy from others is going to definitely give you fibromyalgia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big problem, and it's one of those in my mind, empath's disease. Empaths are prone to particular kinds of problem ailments, and that's one of them that I see over and over again.
But I think I developed fibromyalgia when I was young. Probably in college. Yeah, college and medical school. So I would say if you're empathic, you're going to probably get it a little bit younger. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think, early teens into early 20s, and especially if you have the combination of trauma and empath, that's where I see it's like the train wreck for people, And I do think that empaths are targeted for trauma more than other people. So trauma is something that I work a lot, that I see again over, I mean, everybody, you know, we could sort of sample a cross-section of humanity and we find a certain percentage of people that have had trauma back, have trauma in their backgrounds. But I see an above statistical, expect what you would expect statistically, trauma levels for empaths. And my theory about that is that they're weak and spongy and open energy fields. If you're, you know, a predator or, you know, looking for that, you would be drawn to, you know, somebody that's got a weaker field than you would to somebody that has such a strong, heavy field. And so I think it's par for the course in a way, often something that I have to work through with my clients and my students. Okay, what happened to you? What happened to you? And what are we going to do to heal that? Because it just seems so much more common.
There's a phenomenon I want to talk to you about because I've noticed it, and I want to see if you've noticed it. If somebody has great healing abilities, they usually have a very difficult either birth or something in utero or something right after they're born. Like, for example, I was an RH baby. My mom had the highest level of antibodies they'd ever seen in, you know, in a research situation, and I was the first total body transfusion at University of Maryland. And what was really weird is that when I went back to interview for medical school at University of Maryland, I was interviewing with this one doctor, and he said, I know you're not going to come here because I see all these other schools you got into, but I just want to introduce myself to you. I'm the pediatrician that saved your life.
Wow.
Pretty neat, isn't that neat?
Cool, yeah.
So
great.
Some of the other healers that I know who are just, you know, really excellent healers, one of them had a car wreck when they were like, you know, just within a couple of weeks old and were thrown from the car. And like their mother was out there, and it was actually in front of Baltimore Hospital, which was interesting. It was right in front of the hospital. So the mother's out there trying to find the kid because the kid was thrown out of her arms and actually out of the car. And of course, that person spent the next 6 months in the hospital. So you might want to look for this because there might be really something that we don't understand about having to heal oneself very early in life in order to progress on as a healer.
I do think there's some, you know, in my case, it was the death of, you know, my brother. And I
right,
think
yeah, in utero, exactly.
In utero, yes.
Yeah,
I do think
it can be in utero.
Right,
yeah.
There's a program, and I think it's not all healers, but it's sort of a subset of healers, you know, and there's sort of a lot of talk about the wounded healer, you know.
Yeah,
And that we come in, you know, to our souls, you know, I what I think was really true across the board is that whatever problems or trauma or situations we have in our early childhood, you know, all the way up to, you know, our young teens, provides us with the fuel that we need to fulfill our life purpose. You know what I mean? So the pain to purpose theory, like your pain is a driving force, like I explained, you know, in the beginning of when we were talking about the pain that I felt of being isolated and alone and not knowing what to do and figuring it out myself. That pain drives me to do the work that I do. It creates the fire that I use for my life purpose. And I think that no matter what your life purpose is, that's the case. And in the case of healers, it would make perfect sense that in order to, you know, be a good healer, you have to, or an extraordinary healer, you have to heal yourself. You have to have that thing happen to you that creates the drive to then bring your healership out into the world. So sometimes I think it can be in that, you know, conception or, you know, utero, early, you know, first newborn stage. But I've also seen it in different stages of childhood, whether it's family dysfunction or trauma or whatever is going on. That becomes a like spiritual boot camp, you know.
Yeah.
Our souls like ask for that experience. We sort of sign up for those painful lessons because they mold us. They make us who we are. They imprint our mission into us in a way. And it's that viewpoint that I find liberating. You know, otherwise you can just feel victimized by what
you've
been
through. Right. Yeah.
And I don't feel victimized by the difficulties I've had in the past. I feel like they were the fuel that drives me to be who I am in the world now, which is wonderful. you know.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel that when my mother described to me what it was like looking at me, because I was born way premature, and I was born, you know, very low birth weight, and she said that I just sat there and slammed my arm for hours that the IV was in. I just was slamming my arm. I was so mad. And so, you know, I was just so, she said it was just incredible. But it took that kind of force of emotion to survive. You
right.
know, it's like the kids that are, and I have one of my employees had a very, very premature a son who again has all the gifts of the spirit and again had to go through that very difficult survival, not knowing if they were going to survive, you know. And she would go in every day and just hold him against her chest. And the nurses said, you know, don't do that. She said, no, I have to do this, you know. So it's just very interesting, the things that these children go through.
Yeah, I think
they're extreme, is what they are. They're extreme, and they survive when most children would not survive, and then they end up with all these gifts of the spirit. So it's just really interesting.
And you can think about that for yourself too. Like, not only did you come up with the gifts of the spirit, but the determination, that same determination you had to live.
Has
you know, it's like a primary drive, you know.
It is.
You come in right up out of your first chakra. And to be,
yeah.
you know, birth, conception to about 6 months old is when the first chakra develops. So
mm-hmm.
that drive and the desire to live, which is the function of the first chakra, is imprinted
right.
in you so strongly. Like, you have a strong mm-hmm. first chakra, even though you are sick.
Yeah.
Because now, and that has propelled you into the life that you are now. You wouldn't have be doing what you were doing, gone through medical school and doing all the things that you're
right.
doing without that.
That's right.
Right.
So it is very interesting. Our early experiences do shape us tremendously. And like you say, you can even see the chakra changes that occur. And it's just really amazing.
Yep.
So your soul really does know what you need to do your mission and is not at all above bringing it forth even in utero to start the process. So
no, in fact,
it's
in
amazing.
Utero, and you know, that's sort of like our primary programming, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It gets like programmed in the level of the brainstem, you know, that primal thing, unconscious thing in the cells, in the DNA, like that level is sort
mm-hmm.
of the
right.
foundation that everything else is built on. So sometimes our really strong missions get programmed in at that early stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was attacked by multiple antibodies in utero. So
right.
I started fighting then to survive. So
That's so funny.
You were isolated and had that experience in utero of having a twin die.
I know. That dealing with the energy of death. You know.
Yeah.
Before I'm
absolutely.
Even born, I have to deal with the energy.
I know.
Of death.
Wow.
And you know, now it's not something that I'm afraid of. You know,
right,
spirits
right.
of the dead, dying people, I'm like, whatever. It's like,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course I
yeah.
feel it for, I have compassion for it, but it doesn't
mm-hmm.
frighten me or freak me out
right.
ever.
Right.
Because it was literally programmed into me before I was born.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
well, I truly believe that, you know, our lives, the big events of our lives, like your twin dying, my, you know, my RH problem, and, you know, the major events, who you marry, who your children are, that they're pretty much, you know, they're pretty much pre-programmed. You can run away from them sometimes. I mean, you cannot get married or you cannot have children, but if you do, you have regrets about it. You know, you have.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I certainly as a psychic, and when I do psychic readings for people, this is something that I think about quite a lot and have to deal with a lot of my readings, and sort of seeing our journey here is a combination between our free will choices and
mm-hmm.
our fate. You know, and the fate,
right.
our fates are like our soul contracts, if you rather use that term,
are the
things that we, you know, decide before we get here, and they're kind of like the immovable objects. If you think of your journey down here as flowing through a river,
mm-hmm.
the fate pieces or soul contracts are like these immovable objects that we come up against. And
the waterfall.
The waterfall, the rapids, the big boulder in the middle of the stream, whatever, you know. That we have to deal with. We have no choice, it seems, from the personality's perspective. And at the same time, I believe quite a lot and see quite a lot in the power of free will and the power of choice as being a really important part of our journey here on our planet. You know, I'm not one of those people that thinks everything is set in stone and everything is predetermined. I don't think so, not here. We come to this place to choose, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have the deck stacked in a particular way. you know, these things that we've been talking about to mold us or to create us in a pattern, you know, and then still even we choose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think things get quite exciting and interesting, you know.
Yeah, one of the clairvoyants I studied, I took 5 months off in 1990 to study with a group of clairvoyants, and the leader of our group was really big into changing soul contracts, because of course she could see everything, and it was like, okay, what kind of bargaining do we do now so we can change this? It was hilarious. And you're right, sometimes it can be changed and sometimes it can't. It just depends on, really, a lot of these things are group agreements at a higher level. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
If you're the only person in the group that wants to change it, sometimes you're not allowed to do it, you know. I mean,
yeah.
you will go through that betrayal experience, your best friend sleeping with your husband or something, because you need to do that. I mean, that's something that everybody agreed to. And if you get a glimpse of it ahead of time, it's not always able to be changed. But what you can do is you can start working on forgiveness. You know, you can read The Course in Miracles and,
right.
You know, really start on forgiveness. And when it comes by, you can get through it easily rather than really, really tough.
Or you can, those immovable objects, those contracts and that fate stuff, we still have our power to choose how we're going to respond to them. Even if
exactly.
We can't, you know, we can't choose, may not be able to choose our way out of these things, but we can in the mm-hmm. moment choose, are we going to take the high road and let these experiences open us, like you said, you know, open us to forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
open our hearts, open us to deeper levels of ourselves, or we choose, it's sort of choosing the light side, you know, or we choose the dark side, which is we shut down, we deny, we harden, we become embittered.
We get sick, we commit
we
suicide,
get sick,
you know.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know, and every moment we have that choice.
Yeah,
no
we do.
What.
But it is very freeing to understand that we do have soul contracts so that, you know, you don't end up hating people that betray you, you know.
Right.
Ever since I've learned that, I can't really hate anybody that betrays me. I feel sorry for them sometimes because I realize what karma they just got if it wasn't a predestined thing, you know. Because I'll find out if there are predestined things, in which case it's all agreed upon, probably very little karma, but there's other things that are not that way, and they're gonna have karma because of their actions. So, you know, and people really don't understand the, you know, that they are held accountable.
Yeah, then that's I love what you said. I mean, that power for me, my experience of that is that falling back into my choice, you know,
mm-hmm.
about it keeps me from feeling victimized by those
yeah.
circumstances.
Yeah, right.
And I feel always, you know, there's always a possibility of going back into my power by choosing, you know.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to feel trapped in the cycle of hatred or lack of forgiveness or, you know, victimization, you know,
mm-hmm.
by that. But seeing the bigger picture, and this is why I love working as a psychic, is seeing things from the soul's perspective.
Right.
The soul's
yeah.
eye view, which is really my orientation as a psychic, is
mm-hmm.
to see things from the soul's eye view, allows us to step back and take that bigger view of seeing
mm-hmm.
the pattern or seeing the possibility, seeing the lesson, the opportunity for growth, where when sometimes we're just stuck in the personality in the moment down here on the planet, we're not always in touch with that, you know?
Yeah, and also the greater choices that we have. I mean, I think some people who feel trapped down here, trapped in a job, trapped in a relationship, trapped in whatever financial situation, they don't really, you know, their world constricts. And they see very few choices. The reason I think they need some, you know, spiritual counseling and psychic readings from a soul perspective is for them to understand they have many more choices than they're aware of.
Right.
And I mean, isn't that something that you see happening? You know, they get ways out of things. You know, there is a way out. You know, you don't have to live like this for the rest of your days, you know.
Yeah, I do. And I find that's why I love doing psychic work with people is, you know, offering them a different perspective, that soul's
eye view.
Like, if we could bring your soul down here for an hour in a session and you could speak directly to that part of you, how empowering is that, you know?
That's great.
How broadening, you know, to see the different possibilities and to see the contract, to see what you can choose or what is actually your fate, you know, and contract. That it's unbelievable. And I feel every day, every session, every person that sits in front of me or that I speak to on the phone or through Skype, I feel so honored and privileged to be able to see them at a soul level. It's like Christmas morning, you know, you unwrap the outer package and there's this incredibly beautiful soul in front of me that it's an awesome experience. Like, I feel awe with every single person that I sit with. And the beauty of their soul and the beauty of the pattern, even if it's painful, you know, and it's such a cool job. I can't.
It is. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. Yeah. The best way to get in touch with me is from on my website, and that's www.lisacampion.com, and it's LISACAMPION, like champion without the H, .com. And on that website is my phone number, email address, everything. You can actually book an appointment with me directly online of my calendar there, and listings of my classes. And I do have an online class on empathy coming up. It's running sort of a late May, beginning of June. I have a launch date for that. It's called Empathy 101, and it is a 4-hour video class. You know, with a few bonuses, my guided meditations are thrown in there as a bonus, and some Q&A calls with me. And it is the basic training that I do for empaths. So if you're interested in that, I would get on my website and sign up for my newsletter. I blog. I have a pretty hysterical blog that I write, funny and touching and poignant, about all the things we were talking about today. And if you're on my newsletter list, you'll get a notification about when this class is going to run as soon as it comes out. And this is the starting point for people that get training in empathy. And then later on in the summer, in August, July or August, I'll be running a much longer class, a 12-week mastery level class that's quite in-depth and quite challenging in some ways, and supportive for people who really want to go from managing their empathy to mastering their empathy. That's coming up later this summer, and I love teaching that class. So 12 weeks, it's a deep dive into this topic with a lot of support. Those classes get their own Facebook pages and, you know, support from your classmates, even though it's a long-distance class. So that's coming now, and I'm very excited to be going into the cycle of offering those classes. It's what I love to do.
Well, great. Well, when you get your book finished, please send me a copy of it, and I'll get you back on the show.
Oh, sure. Thanks. I'd love to do that.
That'd be fun.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. We've been interviewing Lisa. It's Campion, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Campion.
Right.
Okay. And we've been talking about Empathy 101. And psychic development, spiritual counseling, energy healing. Great discussion. If any of you out there are identifying with what we're saying today and in need of more training, Lisa has a online webinar type class that would be great to take. I'm sure you'd benefit from it. Next week, we have Philip Cominella, The Collapse of Materialism, Visions of Science, Dreams of God. On the 24th, Gary Noel will be on Reboot Your Brain, A Natural Approach to Fight Memory Loss. And then Bert Baum, Surviving Trauma School Earth, A Practical Guide to Emotional Survival on the Earth Plane. Thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate you taking time to educate our listeners. And we'll be back next week with Temple of Health Radio Show.